Good evening. Coming to you from
New... Getting a little nervous there?
Yes. New Heathenstown, Pennsylvania. This is Doubting Dogma. Been like a whole month, so yeah, the nerves are back and I don't know what I'm doing. I'm your host, Molly Unwarman, and with me, keeping this show together for now, is Riz McCool.
Yeah, I'm on 5 podcasts now, though, if it helps. The one hasn't been recorded since WrestleMania, which was, I think, April 3rd or something. So at least we were, I think, more recent than that. But someone here needs to get her confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have much of that.
Hey, if you can sit here and talk to me, you can just pretend that I'm here and talk to them.
Yeah, except they don't talk back, so there's no conversation, and I'm just rambling about I don't even know.
Or, as it's otherwise known, podcasting.
I'm still working on it.
Don't put so much pressure on yourself. So today we're going to kind of take a departure from what we've been working on, I think, and explore a topic that is new to you, I think. And you were talking to me a little bit before the show, but if you can recap without giving away the personal details.
Yeah, and just disclaimer, I am going to get emotional. So
I'm not. That never happens. I in no way cried in the Pulse recording.
Sorry, that was the bullcrap card.
using those PG words, I'm impressed.
Yeah, I still have issues with a lot of the curse words because it's been so ingrained.
I
use a few, but yeah, it's still a...
Yeah. So here's George Carlin, 1977. Flashback, yeah. 7 words you can't say. There's one point where there's just a list of dirty words. I highly recommend it.
I have seen that clip.
There will be a test.
But, okay, well, you've got me reading Brave New World and just, yeah, think of that as far as Mormon do's and don'ts, and that is what I have been imprinted with. And so breaking that has... difficult.
Well, of the 3 dystopian novels that I lent you, I would say Brave New World is probably the closest to Mormonism, because the whole point of the society in Brave New World is don't think about that. Don't worry about anything. We got this.
Except for the, is it pronounced Soma, that they would take that would send them on their little vacations, because any sort of mind-altering substance is the devil.
Well, yeah, so, but that this is Joseph Smith sanctioned. Mind-altering substance. Man, I've got the lovely bronchitis.
Mm. Ah, sorry.
That's okay. I'm highly medicated.
That almost makes up for it, except I've had bronchitis, and that's still not fun.
Yeah, especially when you wake up at 3:30 in the morning and your husband's sitting there going, take this.
And you're coughing so much, you literally can't breathe. Yes, I've been there. I sympathize with you. Okay, so emotional disclaimer out of the way. This past week, it was Thursday, my husband's great aunt passed away. She suffered a massive stroke the week before, and she had both a DNR, which is a do not resuscitate, and a DNI, which is do not intubate. She didn't want...
What's intubate?
No IVs, no feeding tubes, none of that. And because she suffered entire right side paralysis because of the stroke, she could not eat or drink on her own without asphyxiating herself.
Sure.
So it was basically she suffered a stroke, and now let's all sit here for a week and wait for her to... Sorry.
It's okay.
To starve and dehydrate to death.
Oh, goodness.
And it was really difficult because, I mean, she couldn't talk. We did go and see her every day last weekend, and she was aware. You know, there were times she was sleeping, and the later it got, the more she slept rather than was awake. But the first day we went and saw her last Friday, she was awake most of the time. And you could see by her expressions, she recognized us. She would lift her hand and feel our face. And, you know, I've got long hair. My hair comes down to my waist. And she had, she was such a feisty woman. She used to tell my mother-in-law and husband, don't let her cut it. No, no. We'll kick your butt if you try and cut it. I mean, she was such a feisty woman. She was awesome. And so she would play with my hair, you know, because she loved it, and feel her face, and she would squeeze our hand. And for an 87-year-old woman, she still had some good squeeze there.
Sure.
When she was holding our hands, and you know, she knew what was going on. And I guess there was talk from some of the nurses to move her back to the home, and that distressed her. And so, well, because of what I told you about, she had some not so pleasant experiences at the home. Some of the staff and stuff.
It's okay, Molly. Don't put so much pressure on yourself to not feel. That's kind of what we do.
Yeah, and so my mother-in-law was like, she'll pay for the hospital room herself if they try and move her out. She'll self-pay because to pick her up and move her somewhere else when she's only got days left to live. I mean, that's traumatizing for this poor woman who can't communicate back right now. So my mother-in-law was very, no, this is not going to happen. She's staying here. So, oh, golly. And, I mean,
it's okay, Molly. Hey, it's all right. Nobody's going to judge you for feeling. I had a similar experience with my grandfather, so I know what you're talking about. He got put in hospice 2 days after being released from the hospital and then was gone like a day later. So,
yeah,
you know, I got there just in time. He was responsive but could no longer articulate words by the time I got there. So I've been there, and a lot of other people have too.
Yeah.
So don't be so hard on yourself, okay?
Yeah. No, I just, this is pretty much the first time this has all come crashing down on me since I got the news 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, when we would leave the hospital there after we visited her, I mean, I would break down, and it's just like, it's so hard to see her like that because she was such a feisty woman, even though, I mean, she was so, so small and such a delicate woman. You were afraid you were going to break her in half with your pinky if you hugged her too hard when you saw her, you know, but she had so much life in her. I mean, I told you the story just a minute ago about we went and saw her for Thanksgiving, and she took us around the home and wanted to show us the different Christmas trees that they had set up. And Santa was there for the kids because the families are coming in to see their loved ones that are here. And so they're, you know, little rugrats running around and everything. So they had Santa, and she decided she was going to sit on Santa's lap. And oh my goodness, she had everybody in stitches, and she was saying some of the funniest stuff. And I swear that poor guy playing Santa was blushing behind his beard. Aww. He was turning as red as his suit. It was hysterical because she's there saying, well, can I take him home? And stuff like that. And it was. And I mean, this is the kind of woman she was. And she was just, she was so full of life and so fun. And I only knew her for a couple years, but I mean, it's still just.
I remember my great grandmother who made it to 100. She, even at like 99 years old, would not let you see her have to struggle to get outside.
Yeah.
Like, she wouldn't wait for you in her room. She would get herself to that foyer, and she could see out the window, so she knew when to start. She was still so proud at, like, almost 100 years old that she didn't want you to see her in a walker, and she didn't want you to see her try to get up. Like, I knew someone like that, and I was related to someone like that, so I totally understand.
I am so stubborn myself. I can see myself being that way when I get super old. Like, I've already had arthritis for 16 years wow. in my knee. Yeah, since I was 20. So I'm like, I already feel old at times, especially a couple days ago when that weather front moved in that had my knee swollen real good.
Yeah, but what the fuck's going on with that, by the way? It's like,
I don't know.
Here's some 95 degree weather. Yes, it's finally time to get the AC out. Now let's turn it back to 50. What? We get no middle ground.
Yeah, I do hope that the cool weather holds on for a couple more days because I have my PT test Ooh. At work set up for Thursday. So that way, when I go on vacation, I can stuff my face with as much seafood and whatever junk food I want and not have to worry about, okay, I have to be ready to do push-ups and run a mile and a half as soon as I get back. So
that sucks.
And I'm going to be running outside because I haven't been running on the treadmill like at all recently. And I'm so graceful and coordinated, I would fall off without a lot of practice. So I'm like, okay, so I'm going to take it outside. So I hope the cool weather hangs on because I tried to run one day in that 90-degree weather at 10 at night.
Oh.
In that 90-degree weather. 14-minute mile. It was horrible. I could have swam there faster, and the air was so thick, I probably could have. But, yeah. So
let me ask you this, sort of to kind of guide what you were saying. This, I'm guessing, is the first death close to you since you started doubting your faith.
Yes.
And the reason I wanted to talk about this, not just to have a very serious episode of Doubting Dogma, but more just, there's always a lot of questions from the religious community about, well, how do you atheists deal with the fact that, you know, there's death and, you know, aren't you ever scared of it? Or why aren't you scared of it? And it's like, no, we're terrified of it. But, you know,
it scares the crap out of me. Yeah. And it always has. And I wonder sometimes if that's because on some subconscious level, ever since I was a kid, like maybe even then, somehow I knew that it was all a load of crap.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I've always been scared of it. Or maybe it's because Mormons heap the guilt on you so much. I was like, I'm going to hell. There's no way I can be good enough.
Yeah.
And so I'm never going to see my family again. And I'm going to be out here in outer darkness or something.
Catholics are almost as bad at funerals I've experienced. When I went with Aiden to his grandfather's funeral. Grandmother's, excuse me. And like the pastor spent 2 minutes talking about his grandmother and 28 minutes telling us how this society was decaying and we were all going to hell unless we heard the story of Jesus. So, I mean, it bothers me that they place so much value on this when the people who end up conducting these services can't even be bothered to learn some basic facts about the person. Like, I remember the service for my grandfather. It was a military service and everything, but the preacher, whatever he was, you know,
chaplain.
Yeah, doing that clearly never met my grandfather because, you know, they always make these vague anecdotes. It's almost like cold reading. You know, and when you get to the gates of heaven, there will be Jack, you know, wondering what all took you so long. And it's like, grandpa would never say that. Like, that's weird. So.
And I guess Mormon funerals are a bit different in that respect because I don't know if the community in Mormonism is tighter knit and more interactive because, I mean, you spend so much more time at church than other religions because, I mean, we've got a 3-hour service. But, like, the first hour is what everyone thinks of as the church service where everybody's there and that's where the main congregation and all that kind of stuff. And then it splits into Sunday school. And so everybody's in little classes. And then there's priesthood for the men and relief society for the women. And so, I don't know, maybe the community is a little tighter and you get to know everyone a little more because you are broken down in these smaller groups later.
Right.
And, you know, it's not always just everybody is sitting here, you're listening to the talk, and then you go home.
Mm-hmm.
So with the Mormon funerals that I have been to, it'll be family members, the bishop knows, like, everybody active in the ward, you know, and... You know, they're home teachers that go and see them every month and visiting teachers. And so you've got people that have been close to them. And so they do share, you know, actual personal anecdotes and everything. But I know that Noah's brought this up before on Scathing. Like, if you really believe that they're going to a better place and that you are going to see them again, why do they mourn so much?
Mm-hmm.
And I know when my aunt passed away a few years back, I mean, I couldn't stop crying, but I think that was the first death in the family that was someone really close to me. 'Cause I never knew either of my grandfathers. My mom's mother passed away when she was early 20s, and then her stepmom is still alive. She's like 90-something. It's crazy. But, I mean, she's up in Oregon. We don't see her much because it's so far away. And then I remember my dad's mother passed away when I was like, I don't know, 3 or 4.
Someone was really upset by that.
That wasn't me. But, I mean, the only thing I remember about my grandmother on my dad's side was my aunt trying to feed her applesauce and saying, now, mother, you have to eat something. And, I mean, I was so small. I don't know, probably not even 4, actually. I mean, that is all I remember about my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
So I never had death of anyone close to me until my aunt passed away. And
let yourself feel, Molly. It's okay.
I didn't know what to do. I mean, even still being in the church and knowing the principles they teach and knowing the plan of salvation and how we're all going to be together again in the celestial kingdom or whatever, I that wasn't a comfort.
Of course not.
And I don't know if it's because I'd had sex, and so therefore, you know, I was unworthy, so I wouldn't be up there, or, you know, I don't know, but I mean, it's not a comfort, it's just empty nonsense, and it gets to the point, you just want to throat punch somebody.
Right.
The next person who says anything like that, you just want to kick them in the face, and since my extreme about face away from the church, like with the terror attacks and the Pulse shooting, I know you've been gathering memories and thoughts and tributes on that. It's really come to the forefront of my mind about everybody saying, oh, thoughts and prayers. And so now every time I see that, like, it pisses me off. And we've had a couple people at work who have had family members pass away. One of my friends at work who, actually my captain jokes around is saying that this guy's my work husband, right? Because we sit there and exchange like cooking magazines and stuff, you know. His mom passed away, and even with the cards, because we'll all get a card and everybody signs it and we send it on, like, I make it a point now because I see it as such a stupid thing to say, you know, I just, deepest condolences.
Yeah.
You know.
My dad.
Let us know if you need anything. You know, that kind of thing. Not, thoughts and prayers.
When my dad was having surgery because he had cancer, and nothing has shown back up since then, so that's always been good news. But my mother had one of those, you know, text groups that she would text updates to. And, of course, everybody could respond, and I would get all the responses. And, you know, every time it would
those are so annoying because no matter how many times you delete the conversation, like, it always shows back up, and I can never get out of it. Sorry.
That's okay.
Random rant there.
But, you know, I got to the point where my dad and I are not close, but it's still my dad. And just every time it would be, oh, prayers, thoughts, you know, the whatever icon and all that. And I had to text my mom and say, look, just forward whatever you say to me, because I don't, I'm dealing with this enough without having to listen to everybody's magical wishy thinking. Like, it's in the hands of the doctors, not in some omniscient being. So can I get out of this, please? Because it's not helping. And I think Anthony Jeselnik, a stand-up comedian who is not for everybody to say the least, but he has a great line where he says, you know, every time there's some kind of tragedy, you see, you know, thoughts and prayers. And what people on social media are really saying when they post thoughts and prayers are, hey, I know this bad thing happened. I know this is really tough, but don't forget about me.
And if I say this, it makes it look as if I care.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes less than 2 seconds to type this out. And then my conscience is clear because I said something and now I can go about my day.
Right. It's
because, let's be real, not a single one of them bastards actually goes and does keep them in their literal thoughts.
Yeah.
And contemplate on it and actually go and pray a whole bunch.
It's just a meaningless, empty platitude.
Yeah.
People don't even think about what they're saying when they're saying it. And
it's just like the thing to say, air quotes.
Yeah.
And so that's what they all say because that's what they've been conditioned to say because that's what everybody says. So then they just keep on saying it.
Yeah. And we had another one recently with Manchester and the Ariana Grande concert. And two things pissed me off more than any others. And there were plenty. One was, of course, thoughts and prayers for Manchester. It's like, shut up. You know, nobody cares. And then second was, of course, all the people who were saying, oh, Ariana Grande was sexual and liked gay people. And, you know, that's why all those people deserve to die. It's like, you're talking about fucking children. Like, kids died there. How can you sit there and spout your bullshit about the sanctity of life, even if you don't like that particular artist because she's not a Christian or whatever? When kids die, those people you place up on a pedestal and, you know, try to use to keep us out of the bathroom, like if they get shot at a concert you don't like, suddenly their lives are meaningless and they deserve to die. It's just such hypocrisy.
Yeah, the one that I saw in reference to that really pissed me off was someone had created just a little collage of someone's tweets, all the same person, and this person first was holding a sign saying, you know, well, they're immigrants, let them in, come on, you know, against the ban everybody kind of mentality. And then the next couple were talking about, oh, there was this thing that happened, all these people died, blah, blah, blah. Oh, I don't feel safe. And the caption that whoever had collected this stuff up and was, oh, forgive them, for they know not what they do. I was like, I am going to just, can I torch Facebook? Is that allowed?
It should be. Mm-hmm. There was
I don't want to torch my phone. It's brand new, so I don't want to.
Yeah, there's
that's worse than throwing it down the stairs.
There was one in particular that was shared recently. You probably saw it. It went a little viral of someone saying that, you know, all us transgenders deserve to get murdered and, you know, they hope it happens more. And it's like, okay, even if it was a choice, even if it was a mental illness, even if, you know,
but
all
it's
of
not.
The. Well, I know. Well, trust me, I know. Like, even if all that bullshit was true, even if every single thing they said about us was true, that still wouldn't mean that we deserve to get murdered for being who we are.
No.
Because nobody goes on Facebook and says, oh, people with schizophrenia deserve to die because they see people who aren't there, so it's really their fault. Like, that is such shitty behavior. And I'm sick of the apologetics about that and many other things that are along the same line. But it's like, you see people spouting their religious bullshit about, you know, God help them find a parking space. But then when it comes to people getting murdered, they're just like, it sucks. Like, if your God is only interested in your life, it's not a God. It's an invisible boyfriend. And if you really need one of those, there are easier ways to do it. So, like, in the last couple of years with these... I
just want to strangle some people.
Oh, trust me. I get it daily. So, with these unfortunate losses that you've had, these are the first times you're dealing with it without the, if you want to call it a crutch, if you want to call it an aid, whatever you want to call it, a comfort of the faith, even though you've clearly described that it wasn't really a comfort for you because that seed of doubt was always there. What was your experience dealing with this without that thought even entering your mind?
I guess I just take comfort in the fact that she did live a full life. She was 87.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she...
Door.
And, I mean, she was such a sweet woman, and I did at least have a chance to meet her and get to know her. Because, I mean... Again, she's, yeah, people live a lot longer now with the modern medicine and everything, but she was still 87.
Yeah.
And she could have just as easily had this thing happen 3 years ago, and then I never would have met her. And at least I was lucky enough to have met her and got to, and she got to touch my life. And through that, she does live on.
Yeah.
So.
And I think one of the best ways to look at this kind of thing, if, you know, longer than consciousness is what we're really aiming for. I was reading Neil deGrasse Tyson's new book, Astrophysics for People in a Hurry. And he was talking about how, you know, molecules never get destroyed. You know, they might move on. They might combine with others and become different things. But there's almost a 100% chance that everybody has drank the same water. Everybody has used the same air. There's no specific pockets. Like, it's something we all use. And since we're all made of stardust, like, to me, that is a much more powerful message than God invites some of his friends up to this invisible place where they play a harp for a while. It's like, this is our contribution.
I never learned the harp. It's really expensive to get those lessons, so I don't think I'd do good in Christian heaven.
No, I don't think I'd do good in any heaven, yeah. But least of all that one.
I think I'd be bored out of my mind. Like, what are you supposed to do? In Mormon heaven, you do genealogy and you baptize everybody who died, right? Because in Mormon stuff, like, that's... how you spend, because there's the resurrection, right? And then there's the 1,000 years of peace or some nonsense. And, like, I guess the stuff is still going on. And now there's a dog.
Yeah. Kids got a half day, so they've got to live it up.
And I guess the whole thing is, like, they have to make sure that everyone who has ever lived on this earth has a chance to either accept or reject the gospel. So I want to know how they're going to get, you know, all the nomadic peoples that don't have writing at all, don't have records. Like, how are they supposed to go and make sure that every last one of them gets dunked so that they can accept the gospel?
And, right.
You know, because, I'm like, it's just an impossible idea and a ridiculous.
Yeah, if there's.
Right? You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying, despite our lack of articulation of it. But, you know, when you think about the fact that the same air was being breathed by your ancestors and their ancestors and even the whole way back to the dinosaurs, because it's mostly trapped here. Most of it doesn't have escape velocity.
Compounds change. There's chemical reactions. They merge about and do different things, but all the elements, they're still here. It's the whole, and it's funny because that's the creationist argument, right? Well, you can't make something out of nothing, and so how did the Big Bang? Well, okay, whatever. We're not talking about that, but the thing is, if it was here, it can't go away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still going to keep going. It's going to change forms or whatever. And since leaving the Mormon church, this has me rethinking, you know, what sort of funeral or memorial service or whatever I want. Because I know my mother-in-law and husband both want to be cremated. And in the Mormon church, that's a no-go because everybody's going to be resurrected.
Right.
And so your body's going to be perfected and whatever, so you need it intact. And everybody's buried in their temple clothes, which is, you know, white, and you've got the green apron.
You mean it's not Blue Apron?
No. We don't have a sponsor.
Yet. Although, apparently, I've finally been contacted by Libsyn for my for Inciting Incident. And, like, that's super cool. Not to get off topic there for a second.
Awesome sauce.
They sent me some kind of questionnaire and was like, you know, what's your show about? What's the things that you do? What would be your appeal to an advertiser? And one of the things I had to mention, which I shared in the graphic, is my audience is 54% American.
Yeah.
So almost
half.
It
needs to be something international.
Yeah.
Something anybody.
It's like 46% of the people who listen to my bullshit aren't even American. And I find that fascinating. Because I can't imagine how much of it gets lost in translation. Like, I know America thinks of itself as such a ubiquitous culture, but I've gotten hundreds of hits from Bangladesh. Like,
we have got such a huge ego in America, haven't we?
We really do.
We are it. This is it. And a lot of that goes back to religion and the Christian roots, because they believe that God had his hand in the forming of the country and all this kind of stuff. And so therefore this is, I mean, it goes back to the Mormon stuff too, that this being the promised land, because that's why Nephi and his brothers and Lehi all came over here, because this is the promised land, you know?
Yeah, isn't it convenient that it ended up being the place where the guy who wrote it already was? Like,
I
that,
know.
It always works out that way.
And just a couple miles away.
Yeah, like I love the graphic that shows the map of the world and then shows a little dot and it says, this is where everything in the Bible happened.
Yes. Well, all three major religions all originated there in that little tiny dot in the Middle East. Because you've got what, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam all started right there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like,
yeah, and I'm getting sick of that dog. Like, it has the worst timing ever. But it kind of reminds me also of the Carl Sagan picture, the blue dot, the pale blue dot. Have you seen that one?
Uh-uh.
There was a picture, I think it was from a Voyager, and it was going around Saturn, and it took one last shot back at Earth, and it just showed this pale blue dot. And he wrote a beautiful piece about how, like, people have killed each other for part of control of that pale blue dot in the distance. And this is what it looks like from here. This is how unimportant we are in the galaxy. And it's just so humbling. Like, so many people say, well, what's the meaning of life then? And it's like, no, we get to be a part of this huge, unimaginably big system. And the fact that we exist within it, to me, is empowering.
Is that little tiny pixel?
Yeah.
Aw, we're so cute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's humbling, but it's also amazing that people think that, you know, there's this huge universe of cosmos and everything that ever mattered is right there and that's it. I just can't put my mind around that. The idea that when the Big Bang happened, the you know, entire cosmos was the size of a pin dot. Like, I can buy that. That makes sense when you read the physics behind it. But the idea that we're in this mass universe and we're the only important ones? No. And then when you break it down even further, like, oh, it's this specific place that I already am that's the important one. No. It's a landmass that's slowly drifting into another landmass and will eventually reform one giant landmass, and then you'll have to deal with everybody.
Yeah, and it's funny because if you read, I want to say, The Pearl of Great Price, either in Abraham or Moses, one of our little offshoot
some old
books,
Jewish guy, yeah.
One of those little offshoot books that Joseph Smith translated from one of the Dead Sea Scrolls that he got his hands on. It talks about that God made all these worlds without end, worlds plural. And so there's this, I don't know if it's technically church doctrine or if it's just one of these things that somehow somebody said and then it just snowballed and so now everybody in the church believes it.
Which is pretty much the whole religion, but
well,
yeah.
But, you know, unofficially.
Yeah.
Like, not from someone who had some authority in the church. It just wildfired through the congregations or something. Was that, yeah, God created all these other worlds, and they're all populated with people just like us because we were made in his image, right? Mm. So all the little people on the different planets look the same. But ours was the only one wicked enough to crucify Jesus so that he could fulfill that part of the plan. And so we're all like, wow, so what must that have been like to live on one of these other planets and you didn't even have Jesus even anywhere in your history, and so you had to believe it all just on faith. Wow, what would that be like? Aren't we lucky that we live on the wicked planet?
Yeah, the planet that is so awful that the person who is supposedly supposed to save us all, we went nail him to a fucking cross. Aren't we special? Aren't we proud of our species?
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, I don't know that that's any in any sort of official doctrine, but like they talk about that in church and stuff sometimes about how we were the wicked planet and so Jesus had to come to our planet in order for the plan to be fulfilled with his crucifixion and then resurrection. And so it's,
yeah, God's just playing marbles with all the little planets and then he sees this one, people are acting up, and he's like, yeah, my son's got to go there and get his ass kicked for a few hours, and that way I can make this wicked planet. No, it's pretty much still wicked, because if we're saying this happened 1,800 years after whatever, and it still kind of sucks, like, you still have to write this shit. It didn't work.
Yeah, and then another thing. Oh, golly. I just had a... Oh, the other thing that they like to say, since we're on the sort of topic of Jesus' death and all that, they all like to say, well, yeah, Christ had such a hard job that he had to come down, and even though he had the magic powers to stop them from crucifying him, and he let it happen because he knew the big picture and that he needed to do this, but how hard must that have been for God to turn his back on his son? So, yeah, we get that stuff too. And it all like compounds into the giant guilt trip that they're like, well, see, all this terrible stuff happened because of you, because you're such a sinner. So, you know, if you want to make it a little less of his suffering that happened in the past by now, then you don't sin as much, so then he won't have suffered as bad, even though he did.
Don't touch yourself or dead Jesus cries.
You know.
Yeah. I think one more thought that comes to my mind, and I always think this whenever somebody says, you know, we've been washed in the blood of our sins and whatever that, it's like, you're still talking about the outmoded idea of human sacrifice, which we haven't used for a while. but somehow you're trying to make it still relevant despite the fact that nobody does that anymore, and the ones who do are fucking nuts. So it's like we've clung to this idea that has long since passed through culture, but we have to still cling to it. Otherwise, you know, the planet will be ruined by Lucifer demons or something. I don't know. Yeah. Whatever it is. You know, we'll all become asexual trans people. I don't know. I can't keep up with all the bullshit.
Just because there is so much.
Yeah. It's a daily. Like, I had one conversation that I talked about it on the Sister Getting Out of Hand. That it was just like, it ended well. And I thought it had such potential to go down the tubes like a lot of the ones I have. But at the end, they were like, no, I get it. That makes a lot of sense. Thanks for explaining it to me. And it's like, what? Like, that happens? That's awesome. So,
you mean there are some slightly rational people that start out with crazy ideas and, like, can be shown reason?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, that happens sometimes. I know. I have a harder time believing that than I do all this Jesus bullshit, but that's pretty special.
Wow.
So I think we're about out of time there, but what do you got coming up? What are we going to be doing? I know we're going to go back to the book, but what else do we got on tap?
Oh, well, I have no idea.
Great. So tune in next week when we have no idea what the fuck we're talking about. Perfect.
Yeah. I mean, we got chapter two of Miracle of Forgiveness.
Yeah.
Again.
And then we of course will have to start connecting remotely because I'm moving states.
Yeah. You're leaving me.
Yeah.
But it's okay because it's for grad school.
Yeah.
I'm totes proud of you.
Thank you. And it's not like I won't be coming back.
Yeah.
Of course, there's the live show coming up in about six weeks now. So
I know. I can't wait. Yes.
We're getting a bunch of atheist podcasters together.
All three of my listeners, two of which are from Pennsylvania. Well, okay. After this.
Organize your thoughts, Molly. It's okay.
I know. I'm so scatterbrainy right now. But yeah, Inciting Incident is having your live show, and you're having the Scathing Atheist guys, Thomas and
Andrew.
Andrew, I was going to say Thomas in the Bible, but I guess he's leaving the Bible at home, and he finished that podcast. But okay, the opening arguments, guys. You said Callie
and Ari.
And Ari are both going to be there. Mm-hmm. And
Chris Chloe.
That's right, Chris Chloe, and he is cute.
Yeah, he is.
And other people's,
yeah.
I don't know the whole list because there's so many of them.
In attendance, Cogdis has tickets. I don't know if they'll be able to make it. Sharon Frankel will be there. Trav Mamone will be there. Steve Shives will be there. So there's going to be a wide variety. It's almost going to be like ReasonCon reunion. So
yay!
If you're missing,
and that'll be awesome because I didn't get to go to ReasonCon.
Right. And so my girlfriend Amy will be there. You know, Ginger Snaps, and I believe my other girlfriend Jeannie from Polly Askery, which I'm sure will release an episode before the end of the year. She'll be there as well. So podcasts will be well represented. And if you want to come hang out with a bunch of podcasters getting together to watch people do a podcast, this will be your ticket. At July 14th.
At the Carlisle Theater?
Yep, downtown Carlisle.
Yes.
And it's going to be a good time. So
yes,
you should check that out.
It's going to be so fun. Okay, and we have our third patron.
We do? Yay!
Yes! Eric Ryder from The Odd Atheist Friends.
Ah, the show with two people that use the word odd in it. I'm so proud of
yes.
them.
Yes.
I think it's because of the invisible presence, you know, of God watching over them and
well,
getting mad.
Yeah, you know, he's everywhere, so you have to include him.
That's right.
So, yes, thank you, Eric. You are totes awesome, and we much appreciate your patronage.
Thank you.
So,
and it was fun. I'm sure it was fun for you to be on their show. It was fun for me, too.
Yes.
Phenomenal. So we'll be back eventually. I don't know what day we'll be back, but we will, definitely. And remember,
yes.
if I'm not available, you are allowed to do it yourself. You are valid.
No,
you're amazing.
I has no brain thoughts. I has my little snowball microphone that I got for like $50, right? Well, less because I had... Is it furball? Right
yeah,
there.
It's okay.
Because I had little Best Buy credits, so... So I has my little microphone, and it turned out good sound when I did the odd atheist friend's guesty voice. And I just didn't have brainwaves to go into the sound capturing device. So
it's okay. Audacity is everybody's friend. So we will be back in some form, in some regard, at some point in time. But until then, I believe this has been, what, the 8th or 9th episode? I don't even, I'm Tom now. I don't know what episode it is. No worries. It's one of the episodes, and the other one will be the next
Tom
episode.
First. I don't know.
Yeah, so.
I think this is 9.
Okay.
I think this is 9. So, and if not, don't quote me on that. And then it's 8, but yeah. I think it's 9.
We're somewhere close to 10. We rounded up. So that's about it. Thanks for joining us. And you can follow us, of course, at patreon.com/doubtingdogma because we're awesome.
Heck yeah.
Indeed. Give us money.